Welcome back. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 275. Been doing this for a while. Shingon Buddhism, part 7, in which we will continue reading The Matrix and Diamond World Mandalas in Shingon Buddhism. If you would like to start at the beginning of our recital and sometimes commentary on this book, feel free to click right there. That's the playlist. Bye. Now that we're alone, I wanted to have a little bit of fun, just a little. I feel like Buddhist Books Podcast has gotten too serious ever since Chicken Philosophy kind of took the silliness all to its own, and then Buddhist Books became completely serious. I don't know. There's a medium to be found. So, okay. For those who are new and those who are not new, hopefully this will be a little bit fun. So, you've heard me say it before, but we're going to do it with some visual illustrations. Normally, here on Buddhist Books Podcast, we're reading the Tipitaka of pre-sectarian early Buddhism. That's the symbol that I use for pre-sectarian early Buddhism. Some of you, maybe one of you, at some point, might be looking at that and saying, isn't that statue a classic example of the Ashoka period, which would fall more under Theravada than pre-sectarian early Buddhism? That's a very astute observation, yes. But I use it for pre-sectarian early Buddhism. I use this image of King Ashoka for Theravada. So, you know, putting the line basically, it's a fuzzy line, but we'll say King Ashoka, the third council of early Buddhism, was when that was codified. Mostly, I'm differentiating by, over here we have the commentaries of Buddhaghosa and the others in Sri Lanka and Burma, what's now called Sri Lanka and Burma, who basically codified the Theravadan understanding of and interpretation of the Tipitaka, which is the three baskets of pre-sectarian early Buddhism, which I call pre-sectarian early Buddhism. Okay, then later Mahayana developed. I use this image to represent that. And, you know, sometimes we get into that, and that's at the root of a lot of the stuff we talk about here. Every time you heard me mention this is Buddhist Books 275, so if it ended with a zero, in other words, 270 or 280, then we would have been talking about Vajrayana, Tibetan Vajrayana, in the form of the life and liberation of Padmasambhava. We read that every 10 episodes. And then, but today we're reading Shingon, which is, this is the symbol I use for Shingon. It's probably familiar to those who are coming from a Tibetan Vajrayana background, but it's stylized a little bit. It's a, you know, a four-sided Kongoko, which is called a Dorje or Vajra in Tibetan and Sanskrit, respectively. So that's what we're reading today. So Vajrayana developed in India upon the foundation of Mahayana. And meanwhile, the Mahayana that had already been exported, if you will, to China was starting to mix with Taoism and develop into Chan or Zen. Or Bodhidharma existed. However, whatever side of the, you know, I'm trying to stay open to all points of view and try not to disrespect people who come from a very traditional, you know, or skeptical, everybody's welcome here. Hopefully everyone will feel comfortable if they want to. By the way, I should put this disclaimer. I try to say this every now and then. Do you hear the birds? Is that if you're on YouTube watching videos about Buddhism because you want to attain inner peace, whether that be toward, you know, like a spiritual metaphysical nirvana or simply, you know, a quieting of the mental, emotional struggles and, you know, that kind of thing, then maybe YouTube isn't the best route. I would say, you know, read and perhaps memorize the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, and then turn off your devices for some time and maybe meditate just for 10 minutes. I mean, by meditate, not necessarily the classic yogic dhyan or dhyana. You know, of course, we aspire toward that. But just sit and close your eyes and think about the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path and how you can, you know, let go of some things and improve your interactions with others. And you would benefit a great deal more from those 10 minutes than you will from the 30 or 40 minutes that you would watching this silliness. This is coming from a scholastic, curious, someone called it Sutrayana, not Vajrayana, not Mahayana, but Sutrayana, like reading sutras. We sometimes read sutras, other times we read this stuff. So, okay, so, you know, so that developed and became Zen in Japan while Vajrayana was developing in India, and then came to, you know, Tibet and Japan, and it landed in Japan in the form of Shingon before Chan landed in Japan in the form of Zen. So, you know, the time and places that things develop and the places and times that they arrived in certain places and times can sometimes be different or confusing, like knots and stuff like that. So just for fun, I thought I would make this 10-sided clock. I haven't made it, to be clear. It's in my head. I'm relying on Editor Edward. That's Editor Edward. You might notice that he and I bear a striking resemblance. That's because he's me. Anyway, so yeah, the zero up there. We have the life and liberation of Padmasambhava. Then on the one, we read Tipitaka, pre-sectarian early Buddhism, hence the symbol. And then when we get to the two, then we read some Chan or Zen. Specifically, we read the Platform Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch. And then for 3 and 4, we get back to the Tipitaka, pre-sectarian early Buddhism. And now here we are at 5, reading Shingon. Remember that symbol? Then for 6 and 7, it's pre-sectarian early Buddhism. For 8, it's Zen again. Zen, Chan, same thing. But this time we're reading Dogen. We read Dogen when it gets to the 8. And then for the 9, pre-sectarian early Buddhism, Tipitaka, and then loop back around. So that's our schedule. That's our routine here. I've been trying to think of a fun way to express that schedule. So there you go. And there's the silliness. I hope that you enjoyed it. Silliness is finished, except for any remaining silliness that comes out from here on out. So I will go ahead and get to today's reading, picking up right where we left off in part 6. The hand gestures, invocations, and visualizations. The actions of body, speech, and mind, used in the esoteric rituals, are called the, quote, three mysteries of method, end quote. They are the three forms of ritual action revealed by Mahavairocana, Tathagata, and recorded in the esoteric sutras to aid unenlightened beings to attain awakening. Viewed by the Buddhists, all physical, verbal, and mental activities without exception are the mysteries of the body, speech, and mind of the Dharma body. All bodily movements are aspects of the Tathagata's body mystery. All sounds and utterances are are aspects of his mystery of speech, and the thoughts and mental activities of all beings in the universe are aspects of his mystery of mind. The Dainichikyo Kaidai says, quote, all hand gestures are secret seals, mudra in Sanskrit, inge in Japanese, presumably. All sounds uttered by the mouth are, quote within quotes, true words, and quote within quotes, dharani or shingon. Shingon means true words. And all mental activities and contemplative practices are meditations, dhyana, or jo. End quote. The unenlightened, however, do not perceive the non-duality, the non-dual identity of the three mysteries of the Buddha, and their own everyday actions of body, speech, and mind. So the Tathagata reveals paradigmatic bodily, verbal, and mental actions whose performance is conductive to a realization of the truth of the doctrine of non-dual interpenetration. These actions are the means whereby the innate three mysteries of the being and the cultivated three mysteries of the Buddha are fused in union. They are the links that connect the being to the Buddha. The unenlightened, who view things in their differentiation, distinguish the three mysteries of method, which are the, quote, three mysteries of form, end quote, and the three mysteries of the Dharma body, which are the, quote, three mysteries without form, end quote. They view the former as produced and the latter as unproduced. The Buddhas, for whom things are simultaneously differentiated and identical, see that the formal and formless three mysteries are non-dual. They are, quote, unproduced and yet produced, end quote. In the ignorant view of the awakened, there appear to be three levels of the three mysteries. Firstly, there are the, quote, innate three mysteries, end quote. The actions of the Tathagata's body, speech, and mind that are possessed in an unrealized state by every sentient being. Secondly, there are the, quote, three mysteries of method, end quote, revealed in the sutras as paradigms for ritual performance. And thirdly, there are the, quote, cultivated three mysteries, end quote, which are the innate three mysteries that have been realized by the practice of rituals. By employing the three mysteries of method, the revealed mudras, dharanis, and visualizations prescribed in the sutras, the sadhaka, quote, borrows power, end quote, from the Hanzon, and achieves the, quote, kaji of the three mysteries, end quote, in which he sees that the innate and cultivated three mysteries and the three mysteries of method mutually penetrate. The three mysteries of method are firstly hand gestures, which are the mystery of the body. Secondly, invocations, which are the mystery of speech. And thirdly, mental concentration, the mystery of mind attained by visualizing symbols. The three mysteries of method are described in the following under these heads. 1. The mystery of the body, hand gestures. 2. The mystery of speech, invocations. 3. The mystery of mind, visualizations. 1. The mystery of body, hand gestures. Hand signs correspond to the body mystery among the three mysteries of Mahavairocana. The making of a hand gesture in the right is the sign of the interpenetration of the sadhaka's body with all phenomena and with the dharma body of the Tathagata. In Kaji, the Buddha power is, quote, added to, end quote, the performer of the rite, who in turn, quote, receives, end quote, that power. This transfer of Buddha power is in fulfillment of the Tathagata's original vow to add power to those who correctly perform the prescribed rituals. The, quote, binding of the fingers, end quote, in a hand gesture attests to the binding nature of the vow. The gesture is a, quote, seal, end quote, or mudra, the mark or sign that affirms the vow. In the manner of a seal affixed to a document, it certifies a pledge, it confirms, makes firm, or fixes a compact. The mudra is invested with the power and authority of the Tathagata. Quote, just as no man dares to disobey an imperial decree to which the king has affixed his seal, so no man, sage, naga, god, or demon, can disobey the seal of the vows, teaching, and law of the Tathagata, end quote. It's an old-timey sentiment, coming from an American point of view, of course. Have to kind of set aside the foundation of our national identity being disobeying the decrees of an imperial ruler. But anyway, that quote was from the Jishiki, quoted by Mikyo Daijiten. If you were wondering, chasing footnotes, we all do it sometimes. Mudras authenticate the covenant that guarantees the unobstructed interpenetration of the three actions of the ritualist with the three mysteries of the Tathagata. These concepts are conveyed by the several meanings of the term inge. The usual Japanese kenning for mudra. The first chapter of the compound is the seal. So in is italicized. It's not the English word in. It's a Japanese word. It's the title of the, or it's the first character of the compound. Is the seal, or insho. So insho is mudra, right? Impressed on a document as a mark of its authority and authenticity. In is also, quote, an immutable and irreversible decision or resolution, end quote. Again, it is a, quote, seal of good faith, end quote, the seal of the transmission of the Dharma affixed to a priest's certificate of ordination, gei, G-E-I. The second character in the compound, inge, okay, is, quote, vow, end quote, quote, pledge, end quote, or, quote, covenant, end quote. The compound inge thus reads as, quote, the sign or seal of the vow. The mudra is the external sign of the virtue and power of the inner realization, with a capital R, of a world-honored one, a Bhagavat or Sesson, and the original vow that expresses that realization by specifying the expedient means, upaya or hoban, whereby it functions to attain beings, to aid beings rather, to awakening. For the awakened, the mudra sign is what it's and what it signifies are separate. The hand gesture merely represents a wholly remote referent. For the awakened, that's for the unawakened. So for the unawakened, the gesture, whatever it is separate from the thing it represents. That makes sense. Okay. For the awakened, by contrast, the mudra fully interpenetrates the realization that it signifies, so that the virtue, power, and original vow of the world-honored one are entirely present in the sign. The mudra, while retaining its ontological distinction as a sign, wholly subsumes what it signifies. The symbol and the signified are discrete and yet merged in identity. Hand signs are significant. The positions of the hands and fingers form part of a, quote, calculus, end quote, of correspondences. The right hand is the diamond world, and the left is the matrix world. If you learned something today, don't forget. Thank you. I like to see that subscriber count go up. The worlds of adamantine, such as the worlds of adamantine suchness, the butatata, or the shinyo, and of phenomena fused with principle. The fingers of the right hand are the five elements: earth, water, fire, air, and space, that compose the Dharma body of knowledge. The Dharma body of Mahavairocana in the diamond world and the fingers of the left hand are the five elements that compose the Dharma body of principle. Okay, so right hand, the fingers, Dharma body of knowledge. Left hand, the fingers, Dharma body of principle. The Tathagata's Dharma body in the matrix world. Each of the fingers also corresponds to various virtues and qualities associated with the two worlds. The manner of joining the two hands and the 10 fingers in each mudra is a variant version of the perennial theme of the interpenetration of the immutable world of the Buddhas and the ephemeral world of beings and the phenomenal dharmas. 2. The mystery of speech. Invocations. Invocations, or dharani, in Japanese, seems like they based that on the Sanskrit word, happens, correspond to the mystery of speech among the Tathagata's three mysteries. When the Sadhaka chants dharanis, his speech interpenetrates the speech of Mahavairocana. The dharani is a verbal formula recited to invoke a Buddha, Bodhisattva, or other world-honored one. In the rituals, Dharanis are recited at the same time as the hands form the mudras. For every hand sign, there is an accompanying invocation, and the sutras usually describe the two together. The Sanskrit term dharani means, quote, a support, that which sustains, end quote. It is a supporter for meditation, and it sustains the practice of the sadaka. It also means container. It contains the essence of the total doctrine preached by the various Dharma bodies, so that the Hizoki says, quote, it is called a dharani because it is all-containing. One symbol contains and stores within itself all the words of the Dharma. It is like the earth that contains all things. End quote. Again, old times. The world, the way that the term the world, or in this case the earth, used to be used, can be better understood by the word universe today, I think. According to esotericism, the Dharma is preached in five modes that correspond to the understanding of the hearers. It is preached by Tathagatas, by Bodhisattvas who possess adamantine wisdom, by Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, the followers of the two vehicles of the Hinayana, which we know as Theravada or pre-sectarian early Buddhism. Mahayana, of course, in the Lotus Sutra, identified itself as a big car or vehicle, chariot, the ox cart, and Hinayana as a deer vehicle, a little vehicle. So, sort of like when Christians refer to the Tanakh as the Old Testament. In their terminology, it's just a little vehicle. It's just the teachings of Lord Buddha. It's just the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. Pay no attention to that. Do this. Sorry. A little bit of silliness. Light teasing, not ridiculing anyone. Just, anyway, by gods and by earth-dwelling gods, such as Nagas, Asuras, and birds. Good play. The totality of each of these five modes of revealing the Dharma is concentrated in, or is contained by, a corresponding type of dharani. There are dharanis that contain the essential meaning of the Dharma preached by the Tathagatas, others that assume the teachings of the Bodhisattvas, and so on for each of the five types of preaching. The word dharani is synonymous with shingon, true word. So if Buddha means awakened, and Shingon means true word, and ism means ism, then true word awakened ism is what the title of this video means, part 7. Anyway, which translates to the Sanskrit mantra. Oh, mantra. Mantra Shingon. Mantra Buddhism, Shinga Buddhism. Okay. I'll buy it. Interpreted either as meaning, quote, the thought, man, that translates, tra, man, the thought, tra, translates, end quote, or as, quote, a receptacle, a container of thought, end quote, the container being the tra, the thought being the man. Okay. Thought container, mantra. I like it. As does the dharani, the mantra contains the thought of the Tathagata's Dharma. But Shingon means much more than mantra. The true word is the Dharma preached by the Dharma body of Mahavairocana Tathagata. It's interesting how the word in, for example, the Gospel of John in Christianity is like, means so much more than just a word. And Shingon means much more than just a mantra, which is a word, which is a thought container. The word is a thought container, the mantra, never mind. It's just let that one. In it wholly contains this doctrine within itself. The true word is Mahavairocana's Dharma, which equates his vow made to aid all beings. The efficacy of the Dharani derives from this equation. The Tathagata cannot fail to aid the Sadhaka who recites a true word. Nagarjuna, or Ryuju, it's good to know. So if you see Ryuju, you know they're talking about Nagarjuna. Cool. Says that the words with, now that's Madhyamaka, Madhyamaka Mahayana, the middle way. It is untrue to say that it is and it is not, and it is untrue to say it is, and it is untrue to say that it is not, and it is untrue to say it neither is nor is not. That's Nagarjuna. Sometimes people think that's Buddha. That's Nagarjuna. Anyway, okay. It was part of a development within Mahayana that took place before the development of Vajrayana, so hence it's part of the great library of foundations upon foundations upon which Shingon rests, I assume. Nagarjuna says that words with form, illusory words, false words, and, quote, beginninglessness, or beginningless, end quote, words, are unable to convey the Dharma because they are limited and conditioned. Only the word of suchness, which lies beyond all limitations of space, time, and causality, is able to convey the essential meaning of the true Dharma. Esoteric Buddhism equates the true word, or Dharani, with the word of suchness. Dharani also translates as myo, quote, light, end quote, cognate with the Sanskrit vidya, at once knowledge and spell. Myo refers to the light of wisdom that shines within the mind and form the body of a world-honored one. It has a twofold function. It dispels the darkness of ignorance and it reveals the Dharma. The Tathagata's radiation of light and his preaching of the Dharma are his two ways of revealing the truth. They are essentially equivalent. Since the Dharani is the essence and the totality of the Dharma preached by the Tathagata, it is identified with light, and by its recitation, the Sadhaka illumines the dark obscurities of his ignorance and becomes irradiated with light in both body and mind. The Hizoki says, quote, Dharani is the light emitted by the Buddha, the light within which he preaches. This is why myo, light, has the same meaning as Dharani, end quote. Another synonym for Dharani is Jinju, or simply Ju, J-U, meaning a ritual incantation or magic formula by which supra-terrestrial beings and forces are compelled to intervene in events of the natural order, being controlled to aid the ritualist to gain worldly benefits, prevent natural calamities and disease, perform miracles, make oracular predictions, or to acquire supernormal powers.
The ritual texts say that Dharanis have the power to effect these purposes, but emphasize that the true aim of the recitation of the Dharanis is the attainment of liberation and not the acquisition of worldly powers and benefits. The Hizoki, for example, says that the Dharani is to be thought of as analogous to, but not the same as, a Jinju. Nevertheless, the use of Dharanis to acquire supernormal powers or worldly gain does not necessarily run counter to the dictates of Shingon Buddhism, which views such usage as one of the expedient means. I thought they weren't into expedient means. All right. Upaya, or Hoban, whereby the world-minded are led by degrees to an awareness of underlying verities. The Dharani is also called a, quote, secret word, end quote, since it equates the word of wisdom uttered by the Tathagata. Okay, I guess that was just in the context of teaching. He was talking about, rather than teaching just what they can understand, he'll teach the whole truth all at once, regardless of whether you can understand it. If you can understand it or not, that's on you, as opposed to the skillful means, which I thought was synonymous with expedient means, but maybe I'm wrong, of just teaching people on the level that they can comprehend, and then as they grow, then they can comprehend deeper, more profound truths. But you don't want to scare them with, like, obliteration of their personality, like, on the first day, you know. But this is kind of implying that, like, if you can make gold appear so that people believe, so that they get on the path, so that they, by way of mudras and chanting, eventually, presumably, attain enlightenment. That is still the goal, right? I assume so. They haven't really mentioned it, but no. What am I talking about? Doesn't matter. I'll just keep going. The Dharani is also called a secret word, since it equates the word of wisdom uttered by the Tathagata to express the awakening of the Dharma body. This word is secret because it is only heard and understood by the Tathagata's immediate attendants, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who are no longer subject to the conditions of contingent existence. Finally, so dog whistle. No. Finally, the Dharani is the Honzon's secret name, the name that contains the Honzon's total virtue and whose true meaning is known only by the awakened. Okay. 3. The mystery of mind, visualization. Hand signs and invocations are the means whereby the sadhaka identifies his bodily actions and speech with the mysteries of the body and speech of the Tathagata. He identifies his mind with the Buddha's mind mystery by practices of visualization. The mind mystery lies in the formless void, the arupa sunyata in Sanskrit, the muso koku in Japanese. It can only be contemplated directly in the most advanced stages of meditation, so that Subhakara Simha says, quote, three dots, in the early stages of cultivating the mind, all attempts at emptying it are in vain. End quote. Yes, that is a phenomenon familiar to anyone and everyone who's ever tried it. Esoteric rituals, however, aim not at a concentration of the formless void in itself, but as it interpenetrates forms. It's a little easier, I mean, in that respect. More complicated and easier, and with steps. Okay. The esoteric Buddhist texts, therefore, prescribe various symbolic forms to be used as objects for visualization in rituals, which merge their forms with voidness. These practices involve gazing at the symbol with one-pointed concentration until its image can be held steadily in the mind. Then, with the hands forming the, quote, seal of entry, end quote, the seal of entry draws the Tathagata's knowledge, the knowledge without impure outflows into the storehouse consciousness. I'm just reading the footnote, and the footnote continues on the next page. So while I'm trying to turn the page, how's everybody doing? Everybody doing all right? Of the Sadaka's mind, the two hands are collapsed with the fingers interlocked and the thumbs turned into the palms. To summon the Tathagata's knowledge, the two index fingers are opened and slightly hooked to make a beckoning motion three times. The seal represents an eight-petaled lotus surmounted by a moon circle containing a white symbol, Ah. The symbol of serene, pure knowledge. The reference is to a meditation ritual in which the symbol, Ah, is visualized in front of the face and then drawn into the heart mind. The eight fingers are the eight petals of the lotus. The space between the two palms is the moon circle in the mind. The two thumbs, the two void fingers, bent into the palms, are the knowledge without outflows. That is, the knowledge of the great void and the formless, entering the mind. The two index fingers, index, void, thumb, good. Make the gesture of summons because the symbol of air is ha, which is also the symbol of cause. The gesture causes the entry of knowledge into the mind. The dharani that accomplishes this mudra is Vajra Avesya Ah, in which Avesya is bringing in, and Ah is the seed syllable of serene power, serene pure knowledge. The dharani refers to causing that knowledge to be brought into the mind heart by the command of the symbol Ah. I hope you'll forgive me, I can't help but... Okay, so the thumbs go between the palms. Everything is interlaced except for the index fingers, which are bent and make a... I'm sure I can find it on YouTube, but I don't want to get things from YouTube. Anyway, where were we? The Sadaka draws the image into his mind, heart, mind, parentheses, hyphen, heart, and parentheses, and visualizes it in that location within his body, entering into Kaji with the symbol, his eye of the mind perceives its true form, concealed within, but coincident with the perceptible form. In this manner, the symbol merges with the Sadaka's body and mind. The ephemeral form of the symbol is fused with its adamantine true body, or Shinshin, which is voidness. The aim of rituals of visualization is a union of the sensible form of the symbol and its true body. The aim is not to cut away the illusory in order to reveal the real, but rather to see that phenomenal forms simultaneously are and are not, are both existent and non-existent. Seems to be a running theme in a lot of the things we're reading on the other channel, too. It is what Subha Karasimha calls the, quote, contemplation of the inconceivable illusion, end end quote. The aim, to repeat, is not simply to see the true body underlying the illusory body of the symbol, or to see the real by cutting away the unreal, but rather to perceive the, quote, inconceivable illusion, end quote, in which the true body and the illusory body are in a non-dual identity. The Vajra Sekhara Sutra says that the formless void can be embodied in four types of symbols, the, quote, four knowledge seals, end quote, great knowledge seals, Samaya knowledge seals, Dharma knowledge seals, and action knowledge seals. The four knowledge seals, so just really quickly, because it's a little bit interesting, maybe. In the Sanskrit, all three of those have the word mudra, and jhana, right? J-N-A-N-A, meaning knowledge. I think it's jhana. And then, but then the first word is the word that changes. Maha, meaning great. Samaya, meaning Samaya, Dharma, meaning Dharma, and Karma, meaning action. Okay, and in Japanese, the words that stay the same are shi and in, corresponding with mudra, I assume, or we went over that earlier. So the words that change are dai for maha, samaya for samaya, ho for dharma, and kama for karma. So if you've ever heard anybody singing kama, 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 chameleon, they're not wrong. They're just speaking Japanese instead of Sanskrit. Continuing. The four knowledge seals correspond to the four mandalas. Great mandalas are mandalas showing great knowledge seals. That is, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, in anthropomorphic form, painted in the five colors to represent the five physical elements. Samaya mandalas depict Samaya knowledge seals. The Hanzon's attributes and mudras, Dharma mandalas, show Dharma knowledge seals, which are seed syllables. And action mandalas show the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in the form of action knowledge seals. That is, as three-dimensional, uncolored images. Taking the four knowledge seals in turn, I was going to end there, but the paragraph ended with a colon, so we'll keep reading. A, great knowledge seals. Firstly, great knowledge seals are anthropomorphic images painted in the colors of the five elements that constitute the physical world. The Hinozo says that great knowledge seals are called great, firstly, because they are composed of the five elements, literally the five greats, and secondly, because the subjects they depict are great. Great seals are revealed symbols, and the esoteric sutras give descriptions of their colors, sitting posture, attributes, hand sign, clothing, and every other detail of their iconography. These details have meanings, forming part of a cohesive network of symbolic interrelationships with inner realization. Original vow, virtues and powers, hand gestures, dharanis, samaya forms, and other symbols associated with the Hanzon. B. Samaya knowledge seals. The Sanskrit word samaya, transliterated into Sino-Japanese as samaya, is, quote, a coming together, an agreement, a contract or compact, a convention. A concord, perhaps? End quote. It is a symbol in the sense of an, quote, add equation, end quote. A Samaya knowledge seal is a, quote, conventional sign, end quote, of a Buddha or Bodhisattva. It is also an adequate, adequation. All right. Symbol that contains the focused virtues, powers, and qualities of that Buddha or Bodhisattva. Samaya is synonymous with mudra, which has two meanings. As above, it is a, quote, hand seal, end quote. A hand gesture that seals an original vow, or else it is a, quote, vow seal, end quote. An attribute such as a sword, a lotus, or a jewel held by an image. The hand seal and the vow seal have the same significance and are interchangeable. They both embody the essential virtue of a world-honored one. All right. I think I'm going to close because it just keeps going and I'm literally going to be reading for hours if I try to wait for a stopping point. So keep that in mind, and in about a month from now, when we get to Buddhist Books 285, then we will pick up right where we left off. Yeah, because everything's firstly, secondly, thirdly, fourthly, A, B, C, D, and then the thing we were talking about, and it literally goes on and on and on for a while. So, yeah, we'll mull that one over, contemplate that. For now, and I'm sorry, it feels incomplete because it's like, okay, A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3. Anyway, we'll pick up where we left off next time in a month. It's how it is sometimes here on Buddhist Books Podcast. It's not a Shingon podcast, but I do want to explore gradually. I get to know better many of the various forms of Buddhism throughout the centuries and millennia. It was fun. It was interesting. There's a part of the not goal, but you could say goal, but it's misleading. Part of one of the things that I have in mind in reading Shingon is, I know that the Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava is not the best example of Tibetan Vajrayana teachings. I mean, in the sense that it's not going line by line, but I'm already familiar with a lot of the stuff, so it's interesting to hear it repeated in a slightly different way in coming from the Shingon perspective, so I can see that, okay, this is definitely not something that was like a cultural flourish or something added in Tibet, because it exists in Tibet and in Japan, therefore it must have existed in Nalanda University, for instance. So yeah, I'm noticing a lot of that. This seems to be getting into the nuts and bolts, where the Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava is more like a kind of poetry. So anyway, I hope that you enjoyed yourself. I'm not sure who's watching. Some people watch Buddhist Books podcast with a frown and make a comment that I delete. Others enjoy it a little. Others enjoy it more than a little. Nobody really enjoys it a lot, but that's okay. It is what it is. I hope that you'll stick with us and, through the pre-sectarian early Buddhism and the other things we read here as well. But if you want to just focus on the Shingon, it's up to you. It's your choice how you experience what there is to experience. There's a lot. There's a lot to experience. So if you aren't selective in the sorts of things that you invest time and energy and brain matter into, then, it'll be sort of the equivalent of a divination, in the sense of, like, whatever the universe throws at you is what you get.
Never mind. I'm just talking, free associating. Okay, well, I enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it too. And, yeah. I'll go ahead and do the usual closing we do here on Buddhist Books Podcast at the end, which was the little, the prayer part of the chakra opening Tibetan-based supposedly thing that my dad taught me when I was six. This thing, it's called That Thing My Dad Taught Me When I Was Six. You can watch that if you're interested. Otherwise, I'll just go ahead and do the closing. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.